A jail stint can really disrupt someone's life. You can lose a job, a relationship, or thousands of dollars on fees, fines, and bail.
Have I ever gone to jail? Yeah, I just got out, actually.
If he doesn't show up to court, you gotta pay the $50,000.
No ring exchange, no kiss the bride. There's no glamour in a jailhouse wedding.
Off the Block. All six episodes tracing the path from city block to jail block and back are now available on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment.
Shake it, don't break it.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I've been following the career of my guest, Omari Hardwick, for a while. He had a great year. You think about Bells of St. Anne, one of my favorite films that he's in, Next Day Air.
Oh, man.
It's such a great range. And then I had a chance to meet him when he was doing the show on TNT, Dark Blue, a few years back. But he's broken through, really, in the way he finally should in the show, Power on Stars. I'm talking, of course, to Mr. James Ghost St. Patrick sitting across from me, or Omari Hardwick. Thanks so much for doing this, Omari.
Thank you. I'm beyond humbled, Elvis.
No, please don't. Let me be that.
I am, man.
I gotta tell you.
When you and I met each other, I figured we needed to sit down and do it.
So well, I told you even then, awesome. I just sort of like what you brought, because you always find a way to bring more to the role than is on paper. And I wonder, when you saw that first script for Power and you saw what Ghost was, what did you think of the character?
Well, it was interesting, and I think it's out there at this point publicly. There's been enough interviews where I spoke about the fact that I initially had hesitation. And I think what it was ironic, because what I ultimately learned was Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, obviously our show's executive producer, and then Courtney, who's exec producer slash creator, they both saw me in that film that you've given me such praise for, Next Day Air. So perhaps they saw Shavu, that character, as a precursor, you know, the Ghost. Next Day Air was beautifully directed by young Benny Boom, who was a sprouting director, and we're trying to get him on the TV side, written by Blair Cobbs, and Enie Clemons was the producer. And it was a great opportunity for me, I guess, to sort of take a character that was number four on the call sheet or number five on the call sheet and make people take notice. And I think when I look in the mirror now, perhaps to add to the interviews about me being hesitant for Power, perhaps if I look deep in the mirror, the problem, Elvis, is I haven't admitted that it was probably an attraction to remaining like three or four or five on the call sheet.
Really?
And maybe my hesitancy was about being number one on the call sheet because of the things that came with it. Never was afraid of my talent. Grew up hearing a father constantly say, don't ever apologize for how gifted you are. But equally, I had a mom that would juxtapose that with saying, all praise due to God. So I had this sort of enigmatic turn as this kid who had enough confidence, I guess bordering cockiness, if it's a good cocky, because I was an athlete of like four sports. And so, you know, you don't have to necessarily be arrogant, but you got to be cocky, especially to play football. And then this kid who, you know, always believed what mom said, which was even when I started gaining muscles physically when I was getting bigger, if I wore a tank top, she'd say, cover up. She never really wanted my thing, whatever that was, whatever my thing was.
That's a real Southern church thing, too.
It was interesting, man. It was interesting. So to go into a world where you have to embrace what Pop said, which is fully embrace your gift. And you are trying to make it in a world where 2% of the folks that work are part of Screen Actors Guild, you know, only 2%.
You think about just playing ball. It's basically 2% go from junior high to high school to college.
You know, and so when I looked at the character, I immediately saw the things that you talk about. I saw the range that I saw inside of myself. I saw the complexities, the dynamicism, the intelligentsia of the guy, and the street of the guy. I knew that I possessed a lot of those similar traits, if not damn near all of them, besides, of course, the activities of selling narcotics and murdering folks.
Well, I'm hoping you don't do too much of that. Or you do, please don't confess to it here.
Exactly. Not,
I don't
here.
Want anybody
not on Elvis's doing. Show.
Thank you. Please don't give me that.
No.
I have enough bad trouble. Enough trouble of my own.
It would be another Elvis has left the building.
Running out of the building. But what I think is so interesting about this is that as you're describing your life, you get to play out both these things. And playing, we should say the show is about a guy who is making a success for himself as a nightclub owner in New York, but is leaving behind a career, an extremely successful career as a drug dealer. Mm-hmm. And before that was a boy who was in love with a girl that he couldn't connect with, who he ends up being reconnected to, who is now a federal prosecutor. So these all these things playing together, and he's a guy who is a different person in every different setting. Mm-hmm. I mean, he basically is humble as a nightclub owner. Mm-hmm. He lets himself out when he's Ghost, the drug dealer. And then when he's with her, he's still that 17-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. Now, I got to think, one of the things that once you got past your initial hesitance about doing the show is that all these sides of you in some way or another are reflected in Ghost, aren't they?
Absolutely. I think for me, you know, my wife had prayed that I embrace my power and dominion over the industry. And she did it for 45 days. She committed to that prayer and made me pray with her.
When was that happening? How long ago?
This would have been segueing out of being Mary Jane with Gabby Union and Mar Brock Akil and Salim Akil into Power. She just felt like my career wasn't where it needed to be. And I think a lot like you, a lot of people would run across me and they would go, that brother should be at another place. He's got a lot of stuff, a lot of gift. And again, they were saying it, and it was comfortable for me to have that said about me when I didn't have to carry necessarily the torch. But knowing that her point in the prayer was, he's a torch carrier. He's a torch bearer. He's a king of kings. You can't be a court jester or even a prince. You're bigger than that. And so if we saw the likes of Sidney Poitier's and the activism meets the acting of somebody like Harry Belafonte, and the real breakthrough of someone like Denzel Washington, where roles that would have gone to people that look like Tom Hanks or George Clooney or Paul Newman or Robert Redford were all of a sudden going to this American black actor, not Poitier being from the islands, but Denzel but Denzel being from an island in terms of Manhattan, but specifically Mount Vernon. Jay always felt like, my wife always felt like that's your call. You're supposed to really be that thing. From Belafonte to Denzel, backwards and forwards, you know, a kid that grew up in Decatur and went away 45 minutes to a very white high school where there was about 13 people that looked like you. And so when Ghost hit my face, once I met with Courtney after an initial hesitation of maybe a month, once I met with her within 10 minutes of meeting with Courtney Kemp, our incredibly gifted creator, I knew not only do I have to do the show, but this was exactly the prayer that was being prayed over me, that the dominion and the power can only really come through, pun intended, a role on a show called Power, where people, you know, that are ancestral in the sense of having known the Harlem Renaissance, for example, and having known where we need to go as a people, and having known that when we say we need to go there as a society and as a people, we don't necessarily just mean that black people need to grow up, but that the world, which we now realize as we are on the brink of political warfare, in my opinion, that equally the world and specifically America needs to grow up in a particular way. And so Courtney and I sat and we talked about the fact that we were both born in the 70s and the fact that you couldn't really have an actor play a role like this who didn't at least have some fabric or some Velcroed connection to those born in the 60s, those born in the 50s, the baby boomer generation, those born in the 40s, which is my grandparents' generation. And so I was always proud of us at the fact that my biggest fan base of quiet proportion was that of older black men and older black women who would, if not knowing how to put their finger on it, they would connect with the roles that I played in a way that I felt was definitely exemplary of perhaps being raised by people that were in a different type of march, and that I couldn't be an actor without being an activist. And so even if you made me play this crack-dealing drug dealer who, you know, was a philandering husband, who was an entrepreneur of potential or at least of aspiration, who was ominous and dark and brooding and scary and intimidating, that if you put Omari in it, being born in 1974 and being very much connected still to a millennial generation, but also being connected again to a generation that's as old as my 90-year-old grandparents, that the world could watch somebody do something on screen that they hadn't necessarily seen before. And Courtney was the one that gave me that lob. I mean, she threw an incredible lob because her pen is so, it so matched the complexities that were in me. I was like, wow, we can really go to town. We can have people in the White House that work with President Obama say in some capacity, minus that form of criminality that Ghost is a part of, that form, and operatively I mean form, because politicians are often a part of some criminality, but that form of criminality, even they could relate to parts of Ghost, and I thought that would be really, really cool. President Obama has to definitely get his Ghost on. Any men who are colored brown or of ethnic reality in our society, and those that are not, those that are fairer skinned, that are, you know, white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant, all the way to immigrants from other parts of Eastern Europe, they all have the capacity to be this guy.
Sure, sure.
Being that thing.
It's the treat. We're talking about a lot of things with my guest, the star power, Omari Hart, with the show's on Stars for its third season now. So much of what you're talking about here is this thing that people commonly deal with all the time, which is code switching. Mm. And it's interesting because for me, given that so much of the show takes place in darkness, at nighttime, or in places, the
great
times
point.
Where Ghost gets to show the most joy is when he's out in the sunlight.
That's a great point,
When he's in Miami with Angela and just walking down that street by himself.
Look at you, Elvis.
But it's all there in that performance. I just wonder for you, we just get a chance to show this almost childlike embrace of possibility.
Absolutely.
Breaking away from all these things that he has to be.
Yeah.
A father in a relationship that's not working out the way he wants. Mm-hmm. Undercover lover with this woman who he can't go out with in public because she represents a side that he can't be with. Mm-hmm. This nightclub owner who's trying to fight to keep the club from being taken away from him. Just seeing them show this complete pleasure in just being in the sunlight, I just think it's really interesting.
It is interesting. I don't ever think that an interview is that. I think an interview is a conversation. And in listening to you now, one of the things that has always made interviews fun for me, Elvis, is if it's a smart interviewer and a full awake interviewer, there's a lot of people in life that are not awake, quite asleep, you start to realize that you're learning in the conversation vis-a-vis the interview. And so I still, to this day, am learning whether the fear that I had of embracing that power, that dominion, embracing my place, my call in life, I'm still trying to figure out whether it was the fear of the celebrity that came with it, the fanfare that came with it, the pressure that came with it,
But you were a ball player. You're used to pressure.
Yeah, but it's a little, I'm good under pressure, but there's a pressure that is a little different in terms of family members and close friends wanting and needing certain things from you because you now represent not just you, but you represent them as well. Whether you think you represent them or not, they've made a choice and a decision that you represent them.
If you're a person of color, and we still see so that so rarely.
So that's a different type of pressure than just going down on kickoff coverage and or, you know, backpedaling as a defensive back.
But still it comes back to this, you still got to perform.
Still got to perform. And I think for me, I'm still learning or trying to learn whether the fear was of those things that come under the auspices of that, or whether it was more about, as you said, which I think is a great point, whether it was about a fear of pushing these different buttons inside all of these various characters, that the buttons reflect the personalities, plural, inside of Omari, the different colors inside of Omari. And once they're out there to 8 million viewers, back in the day when film was as big, 20, 30, 50, 100 million viewers, you can't really get them back if you think about it, Elvis. So there's an insanity to anybody that's doing what we do.
We'll take a break. We're talking about a lot of things with my guest, the very talented Omari Hart. He's the star of Power on Stars, of course. Where else would he be? It's the treatment this morning. Come stay with us.
Listen to KCRW's music stream, Eclectic 24, for handpicked music around the clock. You can find all of KCRW's produced content on our app. Download it for free at kcrw.com/apps.
Welcome back. We're talking about sunlight. It's the treatment.
We
my
are.
Guest is.
As I look to the left, and look at this, Elvis. Look at
it's a picture here at the Argo Studios of beautiful sunlight.
Here comes the sun.
And he says it's all right. My guest is the star, of course, of Power on Stars, Omari Hartwick. And I guess as we're talking about all these different things that Ghost is, and we talked about this with Courtney when she said last year, it's really like Shakespearean. I mean, mm-hmm. it really is this sort of thing mm-hmm. where. And also, it's this thing that seems to me not only really American, which is the one thing that you want is the one thing you can't have.
That's it.
I mean, this guy is. We actually have to wonder, when does he sleep? I almost wonder if some of this thing, this is trouble for Ghost is just that he's sleep deprived.
He is. That's a great point.
It's like he's sleep deprivation. There's not an hour of the day where he hasn't been up doing it. My God, when does he sleep?
I think it's a good point you make. But about, you know, whatever you want in life, I always say that to kids that I mentor. I go, you know, whatever you really want doesn't come as quickly. I remember the backup. The quote-unquote backup Elvis for me was firefighting, you know?
Yeah.
And it was ironic. Yeah, I had a girlfriend at the time who was a school teacher and probably really feared, you know, me not making it. And to this day, when I talk to her, she speaks about the fact that it was her fear of her own inability to deal with the roller coastering of the career, but that she never didn't see me there. Because I used to say, if I go into firefighting, would you want me to give up art? And she was like, no, you got to do both. I'm like, well, that's, you know. But it was ironic. It was because I went out 2 years for the fire department in L.A. City. 2 years. And I got appointed. Isn't that crazy? And I used to tell the young cats of all race, I would say, whatever you really don't want, you freaking get it. And the thing that you want, you're chasing forever. And so I ended up, you know, saying no to the fire department. And within hours, and I've shared this story as well, Spike Lee called with my first job, which is really kind of cool, man. You know, so you think about that. It's true. You go in the dishwasher and you're looking for spoons and the only thing you keep grabbing is forks. It just doesn't work the way you want it to quite work. And Ghost is really in that place. I said I want green M&Ms.
But do you like the idea of playing this guy who's basically all ambition? I mean, and no matter what world he's in, I mean, even
he
as
is
Jamie,
all ambition.
He's really driven towards trying to make himself happy.
I think
happy.
Jamie's more selfish than Ghost.
But I think all these guys, even though you described him as a kid when he's at his peak,
that's
at
true.
His happiest,
absolutely,
it's still about this blinding pursuit mm-hmm. of anything, this not just for power, mm-hmm. but to whatever it is he wants. Mm-hmm. That's what I find so fascinating about the character, mm-hmm. is whatever it is, whatever role he's playing in his life, and it's a series of roles he's
I
playing.
I love you for saying that. For me, Elvis, the big thing was, I say I love you for saying that because it gives me an image of speed. And you think about the Autobahn, for example. And there's a thing, and you quietly, sometimes in even telepathic ways, you talk to your creator, you talk to Curtis, you talk to Chris Albrecht, Carmi Zlotnick at Stars. And again, sometimes just with a look. And you're asking all of them, what speed do you guys want me at for this particular scene? For this season, where is this guy? And you made a great point, and what you're basically saying is he's about at 70 miles per hour, if not more, for basically everything in his life. And so the thing that's been interesting for me to play is to slow him down to be a father.
But he's still even impatient with his kids, though.
Yes, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it?
I mean, he's almost like trying to force these kids to do this thing, and now his son is a teenager.
And is trying to find his own car and his own speed.
Yeah, and maybe starting to figure out what his dad is. Not what he does, but what he is. Because there's still information he doesn't have, obviously, but he's trying to figure out what his father is, and maybe he doesn't like what his father is. But I like that you're talking about when he's being a dad, he's still, for me, there's still that ambition of being a father. He wants to put these kids on this course, and kids don't do that.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. It's an addiction, perhaps, to the title. Well, not just the title of being a father, and by title I mean that, you know, the moniker of I'm a father, or even if I'm a papa or a pop or dad, whatever, what have you, that's the title. But it's also an addiction to having a relationship with them in ways that he didn't have with his father. And early on, Courtney and I guess Curtis and I probably spoke about it as well, we were exploring the reality of this guy's father, and he was the club owner of a very small club.
I was wondering if you thought he grew up with a father?
Totally had a father. No
okay.
mother.
Okay.
So his mother was, in essence, the very dysfunctional mother of Tommy, played by Joseph Shakur. Tommy's father was the very dysfunctional, alcoholic, small club owner of, or played by, not played by, but the father of Ghost, who we never have met. We've met Tommy's mom. That woman definitely was the maternal influence on Ghost's life, which is crazy. Now, dare I say, Ghost was probably outthinking her even when Tommy was young.
Ghost is like Tommy's father.
Yeah, absolutely. So Ghost was bright enough to be outthinking mom and trying to tell Tommy, yo, we probably shouldn't do what your mom just said we could do. We probably shouldn't do that. But his father was not necessarily as dysfunctional as as Tommy's mother. He was an alcoholic. He was very much a dreamer and ambitious. And it's a character that's interestingly explored from my backstory. But the world and the fanfare, obviously, at this point, can't really root for any tangible or tactile character of Ghost's father, because there is none. He's the ghost. But we speak about his father in certain ways, you know. And I wish at times they would write it where Angela and Ghost's connection would be one where who she brings up to Jamie is the father a lot.
And that you say Angela is the federal prosecutor.
Federal prosecutor, played by Lila Loren.
Who is or is not, and I'm sure it's going to be is not his girlfriend.
That's right. Everything you just said. And so she, you know, at times her character hasn't necessarily, we haven't had the pillow talk that really goes into, oh, I remember when your dad did this or when your dad did that. I have wanted the writing to go more to that at times where you could, you didn't just have sex between these two, but you had actual conversation, which would, in my opinion, justify and validate and give leverage to the fallout when their characters don't necessarily work out, how bad the fallout is, how connected in an addictive way he is, not just to the woman that got away, who was a child when she got away, as you said, 15 years old, a teenager, whatever, but also the one that has, she's the keeper of memories that he had, connection to his father. Maybe Tommy never talks about Ghost's father, but maybe Angela talks about Ghost's father. And so his father, for me, Elvis, as the actor playing this guy, has been very important that I keep the father close to my story as I dig this guy out and try to make him grow for you guys as a viewer. I've always tried to really stay connected to the father. And then, to your point, use that for the relationship that Ghost has with his three kids. You know, what the father didn't mean to me, let me make up for what he didn't mean. What he was good at, let me try to replicate that. But as you said, if Ghost is so ambitious with all threes of him, Jamie, James, and Ghost, then it's hard to even focus on remembering what you set out to be as a father.
It's interesting, too, because for me, finally, Ghost doesn't know what to do with somebody when he knows he has to trust that person.
Yeah.
Which I think is fascinating because he's, whether it's instinctive or learned for him, it's always about playing somebody.
Oh, yeah. Well, and also, you from that neighborhood. That's like where 50's from. You from Southside Jamaica, Queens. I'm from Decatur. I'm from that. Wesley Chapel and Snapfinger, you know, you're not necessarily bred in trust.
But
there's an innate abandonment that you feel, even if your father was in the house.
Sure, but
you don't trust.
But for me, that comes to that thing with his kids, where he has to trust his kids, but he doesn't know what to do with them because he can't play them because you never know what kids want. They're not going to. He knows what everybody wants. He knows at some point, I mean, it's really almost like he's a Bond villain. At some point, he has that one card to play that will make people, oh, okay.
That's really interesting. You said I walked in to this interview world. I was late, for those of you who know that Omari can be late. But I walked in with my publicist, and she and I spoke real briefly about who Ghost trust. And at this point, Elvis, he trusts Raina, his daughter. Now, the irony is, I can't say that he trusts his son, but equally, his son can't really trust him.
That's what I'm saying, because his son, we can see that distance going between them now, because this is a point where his son's a teenager. He really needs to know his father, and he can't.
So you make a great point when you say, if he can't, to piggyback your point, then what does he do with people when he can no longer trust them? You can't discard your son. So I think therein lies the really interesting aspects of where we're going in season 4 and beyond. I was on Saved, Elvis, prior to you seeing me on Dark Blue, and that home at the time was TNT. The only two homes I've had in television have been TNT and now Stars. But prior to Dark Blue with Dylan McDermott, I was with Tom Everett Scott on Saved. And David Manson, the great creator of that show, we talked about themes of fathers and sons. And I guess we talked about it so much that there was a scene one time with Tom. We lived in Vancouver, Canada, shooting that show. And I leaned over, my character, Sack, says to Wyatt, his character, I say, it's always about fathers and sons. And I think it was an ad lib, but it was appropriate to whatever, you know, dialogue we were sharing between the characters. And it's true when you think about, to that point, the fact that if you can't really trust your pops, then your pops is at a point where he doesn't necessarily know if he could trust you, because the real theme is, what does the son do with the distrust? If you're older and you're wiser and you're mature as a son, once your father becomes a particular monster, let's say, then maybe you know what to do with that distrust and you're able to harness it. Maybe it leaks out at home if you're a married son to this father. Maybe it leaks out to friends, but it doesn't probably damage friends, a significant other, and even yourself to the same degree that if you're 14, 13, and your father is distrusting, you go to a place that is about him paying attention to you. So the natural way to make him pay attention to you is to be rebellious beyond repair. And if you do it in a way that he's out there doing it as a grown man, then how much can the father really reprimand? How much can he jack you up? We've seen, you know, a couple episodes back where Ghost jacks his son up, but wasn't his son kind of telling on him in a real way?
Well, yeah, that's one of the things I want to ask you about is this show is the biggest show on Starz, one of the biggest shows around. And it feels to me part of it is just getting to see these themes of relationship, mm-hmm. and of
betrayal,
unchecked American ambition, mm-hmm. in fact, and the shadow side of ourselves played out in color.
Mm.
If you think that's one of the reasons that so many people are responding to it.
I thought it would pop. And what I mean by that is The Wire, for example, on HBO, which ironically Chris Albrecht and Carmi Zlotnick were over HBO during that time of its success.
And actually Chris Albrecht is now running Starz.
Is now running Starz. The Wire, we've always known that it's touted as one of the great shows of all time, premium cable dramas of all time. The irony was, Elvis, and we know this equally to be true, it didn't have a lot of fans.
Nobody watched it until, it's probably way more than it ever did when it was on HBO.
Immortalized. You know, and not really that different from a lot of legends or icons that have become bigger after they're gone.
Well, I would say this, though, as compared to The Wire. The Wire was a huge ensemble, and with power, first of all, there's a central figure who, by virtue of his appetites, is larger than life. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I don't want to say heroic, mm-hmm. but he's a bigger-than-life protagonist.
You could say heroic. He is an anti-hero hero,
yeah.
is what I call him, a dark genius.
Yeah, he's definitely that, but he's also a guy who... Because, I mean, again, for me, the idea of seeing all these things, I think, are distinctly both Shakespearean and American, mm-hmm. Writ with a cast of color, it becomes a new experience for a lot of people.
It is.
And it's also for people of color watching it.
It's a new experience.
To see, yeah.
When I watched her eyes dance the way yours are right now, Elvis, and talking about it, Courtney Kemp, the show's writer and creator, in a 10-minute meeting, right after I did something very dear to my heart, which was to talk about the very urgent need to talk about what happened with Trayvon. I did that PSA, Little Black Boy Wonder. And ironically, during that time that I was working on the PSA is when I said no to the initial meeting of this show, Power. By the time I made it back to Courtney in that meeting, which was around 3 weeks after saying no initially, her eyes danced in a way that I was like, well, this is a little black girl wonder. But she spoke about in my mind, in my mind's eye, in my third eye, not necessarily just a television show. She spoke about a cultural experience.
Well, I can't hold you sitting across from me, but we're out of time. You're welcome to come back here anytime you want. Thank you so much,
brother.
You better. Power, which will be starting its fourth season, we can now say here. We can let the cat
out
of the bag.
Fourth season,
and then he will be back. My guest is the star of Power on Starz, of course, Omari Hartwick, our recording engineer here at Argo Studios in New York is Barbara West. The show is mixed by Kat Yor. It's edited by Blake Veit, who's associate producer. It's a big, rich world. It's The Treatment.
And I just grew up in the poorest part.
To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.